Good evening. It's nice to sit with you tonight. I told Randy that meditation was so sweet. I feel like I could have sat longer. So welcome. I want to start with an ancient Chinese poem tonight, coming from the 12th century. And it says, 10,000 flowers in spring, the moon in autumn, a cool breeze in summer, snow in winter. If your mind is not clouded by unnecessary things, this is the best season of your life. So we've been studying the four Brahma Viharas, and again, these are sublime attitudes. These are again the teachings that the Buddha says, yeah, you want to wake up? Then these attitudes will do the trick for us. And we're learning how to cultivate such profound states of mind. And so, as you know, there are four: loving kindness. Loving kindness connects us. Compassion. Again, compassion connects us. Sympathetic joy. Being happy for others still connects us. So we have the three options right there that will connect us and benefit us from knowing these ancient teachings. And then the last one tonight is equanimity. And it enables the other three connections. So teachings of equanimity remind us of the benefits of seeing things as they are, because as we know, things are not as they appear. So we begin to pay attention to the change in nature that's important, and to see impermanence, to see the constant flow of pleasant and painful events outside our control. But to see it, to witness it, is freedom. How? Well, we're learning how to be in the present moment, here and now. That's our practice. Not being carried off with every little bit of life that comes to us. And we have lots of bits of life coming to us every day. So equanimity is taught as the final meditation among the Brahma Viharas, because it provides the balance for the loving kindness, the compassion, and the sympathetic joy. These others open our hearts in a wish for well-being. May you be happy. May you be free from suffering. May you wake up. So equanimity balances those heartfelt wishes with the recognition that things are not as they appear. So, however much we may wish for something, most of the results are beyond our control. We learn that pretty fast. So, equanimity has all of the warmth and the love of the previous three states but it also has balance, wisdom, and the understanding things as they are. It's letting life be. It's letting ourselves be. It's letting others be. And we cannot ultimately control someone else's happiness and unhappiness. I wish we could. We're only really responsible for our own happiness. And so no one can make us happy. Why? Well, this joy and peace and happiness the Buddha's talking about is from within. It's an inside job, I've heard teachers say. And imagine the nature of a seed and the fruit that eventually grows from it. If we plant a certain kind of seed, it will bear a certain kind of fruit. An apple seed leads to apples. This is the law of nature. And this is what the Buddha teaches. He teaches the laws of nature. He's not making this up. He has seen directly for himself how to become happy. And so we may plant an apple seed in precisely the same way we set intentions. And we've talked about that and how important it is. Our motives that underline all of our words and action. We plant seeds. And they're planted regardless of whether we're conscious of them or not. So certain kinds of intentions will bear certain kinds of nature. This is an infallible law of nature. Certain kind of intentions will bear fruits of the same type. Now again, we're hearing it. Now it's our responsibility to see if it's true. Because it's not truth until we directly experience it. So intentions are the truth behind everything we say and do. And they're subtle. Certainly are subtle until someone says, oh, there's something behind everything you say and everything you do. That's very subtle. However, you can know. You can know that. And so, wholesome intentions, which is what the Buddha teaches, like loving kindness and compassion, honesty and respect for others, grows. And if they manifest in action, will sooner or later bear us the fruits of happiness. Now, we know we can't pretend that we do that. I mean, we know about pretension. We know what's real in us and what's not real. So, just knowing about attention, it's not going to enable us to abuse it in any way. Trust me, unwholesome intentions like hatred and judgment, cruelty, duplicity will bear us the fruits of suffering if we express them in words or deeds. And again, this is a great reminder to say the law of nature with everything that we perceive through the six senses that includes thinking. Does something. I went blank. Did something. I'm sure it does something. It'll come back to me. So we bear the fruits of suffering if we put out the suffering. So no action is without consequences. Now, is that a little bit scary to you? It's a bit scary for me to be responsible for my actions and my words. But I guess it's time for me to take responsibility for my own happiness. And thus the intentions that impel our choices of words and action determines our happiness or unhappiness. See if it's true. That's what we do in this practice. This wisdom that points to personal responsibility as well as to interrelatedness. And reinforces equanimity in both of the ways. So equanimity distinguishes guilt, which comes from doing it wrong, which is something that all human beings do. But what do we relate to? How do we relate to it? Well, if we relate to it with remorse, we know what we do. We just keep wallowing. So compassion from aversion that leads to hatred. So we can see why it's important. We can just fall off the whatever we can fall off if we don't have this wisdom. So equanimity endows loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, with their sense of patience and that ability to be constant and to endure, even if the love, sympathy, and rejoicing is not returned. We don't want anything from it. Even though all the ups and downs are all the things we experience in life. So the other Brahma Viharas owe their boundaries, our boundless nature, to equanimity, to the ability to experience things or experience life impartially. Let people be as they are. Again, there's pitfalls to that, if we take that literally. But if you have the wisdom, there's no misunderstanding of that. And thanks to the gift of equanimity, we can develop the courage to stay open to suffering. We can face pain again and again without becoming overwhelmed by sorrow and misery. Again, the doubting mind would say, huh? Without becoming so embittered by them that we create within us and put outside what we're trying to allow with the compassion and the loving kindness and the sympathetic joy. So it's a state of peace to be able to accept things as they are. It doesn't mean to be a victim, or it doesn't mean to stand up and act. But again, it's how we relate to these things, how we relate to others' suffering, how we relate to our own suffering. Because that's the first thing the Buddha says, life is full of suffering. And this is to be at home in our own lives. So Sharon Salzberg says, we see that this universe is much too big to hold on to. But it's the perfect size for letting go. Our hearts and minds can become that big. We can be as big as we actually truthfully are. Or we can stay in this mind and body and all the things that enables us to feel separate, to act separate, to do separate. And suffering will occur. Again, is it true? So this is a gift of equanimity. The bigness of holding the world suffering in our hearts. That's a biggie. Seems so simple, doesn't it? Instead of suffering being our own personal suffering, this is a huge, huge teaching. Again, everything gets bigger. And so equanimity keeps us balanced while living in the two worlds we live in. It's very confusing. Relative reality as a human being. That's important. We are human beings. And there's ways to honor that. But we also touch that spaciousness of truth of who we really are. So how do we do this? Well, you're doing it. First of all, by listening to the teachings. Can you not see how important the teachings are? Not to memorize them or to use them for dogma in any way. And to take them to the rational mind and try to process them. But listening to the teachings and sustaining a meditation practice. It's all about practice. So if the practice is not there, just listening is not enough. Even though listening is most important. Because what happens in our practice, once we open up to ourselves in a big, wide way, we begin to see things. And we do this with patience, practice. Patience, practice. And we build a practice, and the truths will come to us. That sounds profound. I think I said that. Build a practice, and the truths will come. We'll see if that's true. Thank you.